I'm Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. This summer, many communities are restricting beach and pool access because of COVID-19, but many of those restrictions could keep some families out of the water.
There's been a long history of exclusionary practices in many suburban and outlying communities, not just in the New York metro area, but across the U.S. And oftentimes, these had a disproportionate impact on working families and people of color.
Andrew Carl is a professor of history and African American studies at the University of Virginia and author of Free the Beaches, the story of Ned Cole and the battle for America's most exclusive shoreline. And according to Andrew, there are a few different types of barriers to beach and pool access right now.
We've seen sort of two parallel developments happening this summer. One is that many cities and towns have been forced to close their public swimming pools or public beaches, not just out of public health concerns, but also out of budgetary ones, that the coronavirus and pandemic has really decimated local budgets and forced many communities to keep their pools closed this summer. And at the same time, we've been seeing private clubs, private beaches, or wealthier communities that can't afford to keep their facilities open this summer, adopting more aggressive practices to keep non-members or non-residents out.
We're seeing a lot of that activity out on Long Island. In fact, there's one beach I know that increased its cost per car from $20 a car to $50 a car. How much has economics played in the disparities that we're seeing in terms of access?
It's been a huge factor, but also I think it's important to note that oftentimes these types of fees and charges are not just about raising revenue. It's also about keeping certain families who cannot afford to enter out. And I think this is important to recognize, that the use of beach access fees and other charges that are oftentimes much higher for non-residents has been an exclusionary measure that has been used often in the past.
A lot of this is socioeconomics, and I'm wondering if you can tell us what are some of the more subtle and more explicit policies that have been used to discriminate as far as beach access is concerned.
Going back to the early 20th century, when we began to see public swimming pools and beaches emerge across the U.S., they became often flashpoints of racial conflict, and ones in which socially advantaged communities adopted measures that were designed quite explicitly to exclude people of color. You know, we saw that clearly in the Jim Crow South, where there was explicit whites-only beaches, whites-only swimming pools. But we also saw in places like the Northeast, in states like Connecticut, where beaches were ostensibly non-racial, but in practice, oftentimes were racially exclusionary, whether it be resident-only ordinances or policies that made it much more cost prohibitive for non-residents. And this as well began to increase in direct relation to the increasing diversity of neighboring cities. So if, say, you're living in an all-white suburb that grew during the post-war era, you oftentimes would see, along with exclusion in housing markets, you would also see exclusion in public places of recreation, that the two kind of went hand in hand.
And as we mentioned earlier, we are now in the middle of a global pandemic, which has gotten many city-state governments thinking about whether to open public pools and public beaches and how far they should go. Do they allow swimming? Do they enforce social distancing? You wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, Andrew, with the headline, "Who Will Get to Swim This Summer?" We're now in July. Who's gotten to swim this summer?
Well, by and large, it's been families who are members of either private clubs or have the ability to seek out more remote locations, whether it be spending a week on a lake or having access to other private facilities. But those who have relied primarily on public beaches or public pools have been really adversely affected. By some estimates, over one third of all public swimming pools in America are closed for this summer. That number could actually be even higher. A real concern here is that those who rely on public places of recreation have found it increasingly difficult to access any bodies of water for their families, for their children. And this is, again, something that is a really important part of being able to not just enjoy the summer, but for people's individual and community health.
I want to dig a little bit more into that, because we did a story here on The Takeaway a couple weeks ago where I was sort of prompted by many of the local news reports about people who were buying pools for their backyards because of the pandemic. And it just got me thinking about so many people who don't live in houses, who won't have access to swimming pools, who will be essentially crowded and hot this summer in a city like New York. Is there or should there be a right to outdoor recreational space?
I believe so. I think that the United Nations defined recreation as a basic human right. And I think it's well understood that so long as people take precautions, outdoor activities are not only safe but necessary for coping with the stress of the pandemic, as well as the daily stress of racism in America that has oftentimes only been compounded by the struggle to access outdoor space. Summers, especially in cities, have long been sites of tension and conflict over access to outdoor recreational space. And I believe it is rooted in this tension between the real human need for getting outdoors, especially during hot summer months, and the increased privatization of public space that has made it inaccessible for many American families.
I'm wondering how you see this fitting into the larger reckoning with systemic racism and this uprising that we've seen across the country right now. Is there any pushback to what we're seeing in terms of access to local pools, beaches, recreational spaces?
We've seen in the past real efforts to ensure that the public has right to public space. And beaches have long been a space that have really been at the center of these broader struggles over the public's right to common areas. And because, for one, America's coastlines are legally public land, but the public's right to access them has been severely restricted, whether it be local communities placing ordinances on accessing beach space or beachfront property owners seeking to fence off areas. And so I think that we've continued to see how this struggle over public recreation is really a struggle over the right to the commons and over the right to access what are common resources that should be available to everyone. I think certainly that we should put in place measures to ensure that people practice social distancing in these spaces. We can find ways to regulate access to public space in a way that ensures public health but doesn't simply compound existing inequities. What we're seeing this summer is that the burden of public health concerns is being placed on one segment of the population and not others.
Andrew Carl is a professor of history and African American studies at the University of Virginia and the author of Free the Beaches. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.